Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. We've often talked on this show about how accessible computers are to the visually impaired and what great professions are available to the visually impaired in the area of computer programming.
This week, we'll speak with Cheryl Cummings and Rich Caligero about a computer camp for blind youth that they are organizing to introduce young people to these skills. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Cheryl Cummings.
I really think that what's very, very important for folks who are blind, maybe for anybody, is the sense and willingness to explore unexpected things or new things, because so often it's a little bit like you don't know what you don't know. And to some extent, when people come along and say, have you ever thought about this? Sometimes the real success and the real opportunities in life come when people ask you to think beyond where you are at present and to trust that they might actually be able to introduce you to something that might make a lot of sense for you, maybe in the future, but isn't too obvious right at the present.
And I can't agree more with that. You know, life is really a learning experience, not only when you're in school, but even after school. There's always something new to learn, always some new experience to be had, and you should just keep on experimenting. And if something doesn't work out, try something else or try another way of doing something.
And it was in that spirit that Cheryl spearheaded this summer computer camp for blind youth in the hopes of introducing them to something that they will not only enjoy but find useful that they might otherwise not have thought they would.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
Mystic Access, providing assistive technology audio tutorials and trainings designed to empower and motivate. Products are created by the blind for the blind. More information available at mysticaccess.com, where the magic is in learning.
And by
The Guide Dog Foundation, training and placing guide dogs for over 70 years, providing independence, enhanced mobility, and companionship to people who are visually impaired or have other special needs at no personal cost. To learn more about their programs or to apply for a guide dog, visit www.guidedog.org. Let's start by meeting Cheryl and Rich.
My name is Cheryl Cummings. I live in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm married. I'm blind. And I suppose part of my story is that I became blind my freshman year in high school and graduated on time, don't know how, and completed my undergraduate work at Princeton and my master's at Tufts. And I'm here because I've been running a nonprofit organization in Boston for the last 10 years, sort of as a volunteer, because my primary work has been doing policy work looking at long-term services for elders and people with disabilities. And we're at this point where I thought it was important to think about issues around coding and computers and work opportunities for young people who may be interested in that field.
And you said you lost your vision in ninth grade. What was the cause of that?
Oh, encephalitis.
Oh.
Yeah, I was living in Chicago, and that year they said, oh, there was an epidemic. Six people got encephalitis. I was one of the six.
Are you totally blind now? Do you have any vision?
No, I'm totally blind.
My name is Rich Caligero. I also live in Boston and graduated from Worcester Polytech with a degree in computer science and am now working at MIT on their UX team, so user experience and accessibility team. So I pretty much am the screen reader tester for websites and software.
So you have a different set of skills.
So I have a very different set of skills, and mostly computer skills. I'm also a part-time hobbyist musician and just a general kind of hacker.
So how did you two get together to work on this project?
Cheryl had asked me about this, and I have absolutely no experience working with kids or anything else, but I do know how to program. And I do happen to be totally blind. So I was born with what they used to call RLF, basically scar tissue on the retina from too much oxygen. So she had asked me what I thought about it, and I said, well, it sounds like a great idea, and I think we should work on it and see where it goes. You know, I think it's great if we can expose kids to these things, and maybe it'll give somebody a future that they never thought they had.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the computer camp for blind youth that Cheryl and Rich are organizing.
Anyway, we were very excited to hear from you about this computer camp for the blind that you're starting up this summer. And so we were pleased to kind of do a show about that because, myself being blind and having been in the computing arena for many years as a research physicist, I think computers are a great career for visually impaired folks. Can you tell us a little bit about what prompted this idea? What was your motivation to get this camp together?
One of the goals of the organization, Our Space, Our Place, is to do career exploration. And, you know, living in Boston, with so many technology companies in the area and the whole tech sector, I started thinking about, well, why don't I see blind folks actually working in these different fields? And then at the same time, two things happened to me personally. One was my contract at the University of Massachusetts ended. And the second thing was a friend of mine told me about an organization called Smarter in the City, which is a business incubator for minority startups. And she's like, oh, you should apply. And so sort of thinking about, well, what would that mean? We started to think about doing something around maybe coding or programming for youth who are blind.
How did you proceed from there?
When I went for that interview to join this business incubator, I met another person who became my mentor there named Tim Buntel. He's a software engineer. And it was really fantastic because the moment I started talking about this, he's like, that makes total sense. Because, you know, why should blind people just be users of technology? Why shouldn't you be in a space to create and to contribute to the making of technology? And he started to talk to us about computer literacy. So moving it beyond just sort of, you know, knowing how to use it, but to really understanding how computers work and how they function and sort of what our role is. And that's when I reached out to Rich, because as he mentioned, I'm not a computer person per se. I'm definitely a computer user. And then I also reached out to Lynette, another woman who is blind. And I reached out to Lynette because she has been an assistive technology instructor for the last 20 or so years. So we formed a little group of myself. So my role was to sort of do the research, gather materials, sort of keep us moving along. And Lynette, Rich, and Tim, who have the computer knowledge, to help us think through what will it mean to create opportunity for blind youth to learn about programming.
A little while ago, you mentioned Our Space, Our Place. What does that organization do?
Our Space, Our Place, I would describe as an after-school and career exploration program. We work with youth who are blind, primarily in middle school and high school, and we use what's called the expanded core curriculum to identify sort of areas we're going to work on. So for us, the areas we selected were around recreation, social integration, and career exploration. And sort of using that as our guidepost, we then have identified different activities that we do throughout the year. And those include things like theater and dance and tours of museums and cooking classes and our new running group and science experiences. And it's all aimed at giving kids who are blind opportunities to develop friendships with each other because, you know, because blindness is a low incidence disability, sometimes you have one or two kids in a school of 900. And so here they're together, they get to meet each other. As I said, they can develop friendships. And I think basically what we offer is we offer a space where kids can come together and their blindness, it's not the defining characteristic. You know, they come together and whatever they're doing, no one will ever say to them, you can't do it because you're blind, or, oh my gosh, we didn't think about you. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity for kids to, on a consistent basis, because we meet every week, to have this place where nobody cares whether you can see or how much you can see. Whatever you're doing, you do it because it's something you can participate in.
Wow, sounds like fun. I wish I was young again.
Well, and you know, I'm a firm believer in mainstreaming wherever possible, and Pete actually got mainstreamed starting in the fifth grade. But this is a nice complement to mainstreaming the kids for all of the social reasons that you just described.
Yes. I lost my vision when I was 13, as I told you, and I continued in my regular school. So I, too, totally believe in mainstreaming, but I think there is a space where what we do as an after-school and career exploration program is needed. I think everybody needs a space where you can go and you can just go, you know, you're not, like, nobody's inquiring, oh, how do you use your cane? How do you get from point A to point B? You know, oh my gosh, it's so exciting. Did you read Braille? I mean, you know, it matters, but on some level, who cares? I mean, the important thing is you're just one of a group. And I think there are times when we just, everybody needs that. You just need to be part of something where whatever the thing is that makes you sort of stick out in another situation doesn't matter.
So getting back to the computer camp that you're setting up, I must say that the computers are so ubiquitous in all parts of our society these days that I think it's important for people to know about computers and that kind of technology, whether you're sighted or not. But particularly for visually impaired people, access to computers is so good these days that blind people can really be on a par with their sighted counterparts if they're facile with computers. You're really not at a disadvantage.
Well, except perhaps in this tiny little arena, because I'll have Rich talk some more about this. But when we started doing research, it was very interesting because you've probably heard, you know, about the use of programs such as Scratch and other programs that are being used to teach kids about programming. And for kids who are totally blind, that turns out to be totally inaccessible.
Oh, so a lot of these must be graphical in nature to make it easier for sighted people?
Yeah,
these are visual programming environments. You know, you just have little blocks on the screen, I guess, and each one does a different thing, and you plug them together in a sequence and you know, hit run, and the thing does whatever you asked it to do.
Those are not readily amenable to visually impaired folks.
Right. That, and it also the thing that I've been thinking about is, well, how do you motivate kids to want to do this stuff? I mean, sighted kids could be motivated by cute graphics and all kinds of animations and all that stuff. In these type of visual programming environments, I'm sure that that's easy to use and very accessible. So it helps motivate people, especially kids, to learn about this stuff because they can draw cool things and make them move around and do all kinds of neat stuff fairly easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once they discover the power of that, then they can and look under the hood a little bit more. And I believe a lot of these environments can actually show you the code that they're generating.
Yeah, but I guess these graphical environments, particularly for beginners and students at a young age, they don't have to learn the syntax of coding. And if they're just moving around graphic items, that's a lot easier for them, an easier way to get involved in coding.
Right. But it's a way of introducing the concept of computational thought. So in other words, you can, you know, you have a sequence of operations, you break your problem down into a logical sequence of steps, you write the steps out in a logical order and such like that.
What age group is this camp aimed at?
We've opened up the camp to kids ages 12 through 21, folks who are in middle and high school. And I think, you know, as we're still sort of finalizing the curriculum, Lynette has graciously agreed to be our HTML and CSS sort of instructor. And I think Abel, the professor from MIT, is interested in helping us with JavaScript and sort of integrating some tangible outcomes on a daily basis for the curriculum. So we know that by July, we will have everything all set.
So that's an enormous age range, and you will no doubt have students with a wide range of experience and ability. Are you planning to break them up into groups that are of a smaller range of background and ability?
Right now, we're aiming to get 10 students to participate. And I think on the flyer, we ask that people join us who are proficient users in, you know, a screen reader program or a magnifier program. And we probably will, because one of the ways I know that helps people to learn is, you know, small groups definitely make a difference. Again, it's a little bit of a wait and see thing. We'll see who signs up, and then we'll figure out like how best to cluster everybody together.
And what skills will you be teaching the people in this program? How do you get them started?
I'm going to jump in here. And as far as the motivational piece, I have questions about how to motivate blind kids in this stuff, because, you know, there is no cool graphics or cool animation stuff to get them interested. So my only thought was, well, let's try to teach them web programming, and that way the user interface is kind of implied to some extent, and HTML is a whole lot easier to learn than having to program a UI in some imperative language. And then you can teach JavaScript as a way to add behaviors to your website. So I make a button do something interesting or whatever. And, you know, that's also a good stepping stone into building your own website and towards a career path in this stuff, because you know, web development is obviously a very hot career path these days, and it can lead to lots of other interesting things.
Well, and one thing that we've certainly experienced through our professional lifetimes, you know, we first started learning how to program computers in the early 1970s, maybe late 60s, and every so often, some language becomes obsolete and you need to learn another language. And oh, by the way, the operating system becomes obsolete and you need to learn to work in another operating system. But the concepts carry over from one to the next to the next. And so if you can learn the concepts and you can learn the organizational structure and you can learn to enjoy working with computers, then the details of what language you actually work on later, that's going to change anyway. So just, you know, have a good time learning the concepts and build from it later.
Right. Yeah, I agree. But I think the real key is going to be, you know, first of all, figuring out what kind of age range we have, and then figuring out how to really motivate kids. And maybe that's not the question to ask. Maybe they're already motivated. Maybe the kids that we get are going to already be sort of poking around and, you know, wondering how all this web stuff works under the hood. And maybe they'll be fine. Maybe they'll be just dying to learn. I don't know.
So you may or may not know this, but we did an episode earlier this year with Marty Schultz, who developed the series of blindfold games. And that was episode number 1603. That all started out, he was doing a project with his 10-year-old daughter and some of her classmates. And it's amazing what you can teach kids to do.
I think for us, we want to get kids excited about this idea. And so we're sort of leaving it a little open right now, as I said, to see who's going to respond. And then we'll work, I think, on sort of tightening up the curriculum to appeal to the kids who are participating. But as you said, I'm always amazed. I mean, the after-school program, we've got about 6 kids who participate in the program on an ongoing basis. And I'm always intrigued by the extent to which the kids will, like, exceed expectations.
So this camp is running for a week. Is this a full-day camp or a few hours a day or what?
So it's from July 11th through the 15th. Our goal is to start 10 in the morning and to finish around 2:33. So a big chunk of the day. We selected 10 recognizing we wanted to miss some of the crazy morning getting to work traffic. And then the idea is in the morning, we're going to do the sort of instruction and the teaching. During lunch, we're inviting professionals from different aspects of the technology field to come and have lunch and to share with us some, like, their career path and their ideas about the sector. And then in the afternoon, the kids will have the time to do some hands-on work using the computer and whatever the instruction was during the day. And we're very excited about getting volunteers to come in who will spend, you know, one-on-one time with the students in the afternoon.
What are the requirements for students who want to attend this program?
We want folks who are interested. We set some basic criteria, like you need to, as I said, you need to know JAWS or whatever screen reader program you use, and you need to be a proficient user of, you know, whatever magnification program you use, because those are not things we can, like, teach you as we're trying to do this. But I think since we don't know who's going to show up, hopefully that means that lots of people might say, I meet that basic criteria and I'm sort of interested, because those are the people we want.
So you talked about some of the requirements to get into this camp.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you'll have the equipment, computers with speech synthesizers and magnification programs available on them for the students?
Yes, we have been so fortunate, because one of the outcomes through my participation with Smarter in the City, I was introduced to some folks at Microsoft. And so Microsoft has offered us a computer lab to use at no cost. And at the same time, Freedom Scientific has offered to provide the licenses so that we can put JAWS and Magic on the computers. So those things will be all set up.
This camp is going to be in Boston, and we have listeners around the world. If there's somebody who's from out of town, would you be willing to work with them on identifying a housing option for the week?
Yeah. I mean, I say Boston in the summer, it's a beautiful place. We would love, you know, if somebody wants to come and visit. I think the families would have a fun time sightseeing while the student is participating in the program. And we're very fortunate that we will have donations so that, you know, we can offer partial scholarships for participation.
Now for this week's final item, how to get more information about the camp, including how to sign up for it, as well as some final thoughts from Cheryl and Rich.
So if people want to find out more about the camp and how to get in, what should they do?
One, they can go to our website, which is ourspaceourplace.org. There's a description, there's a link to the camp, information about the camp, and there's a registration form. The second thing is they can call our organization number. Usually they'll get an answering machine, but if they leave a message, somebody will get back to them within a day or two. And that number is 617-459-4084.
Is there an email address that people can use if they have questions?
Sure. They can send me an email, and they can just send it to president@ourspaceourplace.org.
And do you have a social media presence?
We're working on that. We do have a Facebook page, but we're working to sort of set up a Twitter account and other things.
I actually went to your website and I found your registration form. And the hardest question on there is whether you use a screen reader or a magnifier. So it's very quick and easy. What's the deadline for trying to register for this program?
We would like to know by the end of June if someone is going to participate with us or not. There are 10 slots. So if we fill up the 10 slots before the end of June, then we'll just let it be known that there isn't any more space.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the big reasons for wanting people to register ahead of time is that you're going to actually tailor the program to who the attendees are.
Absolutely. And so we really do need to know, because then we will follow up with people and sort of get a better sense of sort of where they are and what they're interested in.
Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to add?
For me, I guess it's a continuous process of learning. I mean, there's always something new to learn. I mean, I have this computer on my desk now that's, you know, 1,000 times more powerful than the ones I started off learning on in the 70s. And also as a career path, it's been wonderful because I can feel like I'm doing something useful. I can continue learning and I can make a decent living.
And you've had a lot of enjoyment doing it over the years, I take it.
And it's been fun. It's been very fun.
And you know, it's also so gratifying to be able to share something you love with young people who want to absorb it.
Agreed.
You're going to have as much fun as the kids in July.
I'm planning to.
Me too.
As I've mentioned, I mean, one of the really fantastic things about leading Our Space, Our Place has been, I mean, in as much as it's a learning experience for the kids, it's a bit of a learning experience for me too.
Well, that certainly sounds like a lot of fun. And I'm very glad that we got the opportunity to talk to both of you about the camp this summer that you're setting up for visually impaired youth. So if people are interested in finding out more about the camp or perhaps participating in the camp, you have all that contact information they gave you. And if you missed it, it's in the show notes as usual at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1624. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the KNFB Reader app. And we talked about that a couple of years ago, but we'll fill you in on what's new since then. The KNFB Reader app running on your smartphone can be easily used to snap pictures of printed material, such as books, letters, menus, etc., and have them instantly read back to you. We'll talk with Joel Zimmer, Reading Innovation Project Manager at the National Federation of the Blind, about the app and some of its functionality. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.